Hearing Within, Section 5, a series of introspections 1 through 6 for learning introspection. Hearing Within, I imagine I am whatever I hear. This is more true than we realize. We think that we are whatever we hear. We think that whatever we hear, that's who our reality is. That's what we're going on inside of our mind, inside of our being. What we hear, that is who we are. And that's not really true. What we hear is what we have interpreted from what's going on inside of our inner self. We've interpreted that we hear a sound that's a bird, so we name it a bird. You see, our hearing is merely a matter of having impulses that are pounding upon the tympani of our eardrum there and singing a song to us of vibrations up and down. And these vibrations we have learned to interpret over a period of time. We say, come to the dog, and he puts that with the idea that he is supposed to come to us when we say come. We say, sit to our dog, and he puts the idea that he must sit when we say sit. And we do not confuse it with a lot of words. Now come here and sit down and be a good boy and please sit down. I want you to sit down. Oh, come on now. And you see, he doesn't learn anything by that. His brain is working on imagination. His brain is working on vibrations alone. And when we give a single vibration and indicate that we want him to sit, then he will do this. Now you say, wow, that's a long learning process. Yes, it is. It's a learning process that dogs and animals go through. But you see, dogs and animals don't learn a lot of things. They learn only a few things, and they learn them in just that particular way. And the dogs also learn the sound of our voice. Hey, y'all, and dinner, and come on now, it's time to eat, wow. And you see, they get the feeling, they get the emotion that we project forward on that. And so you see, they're hearing within on their own inner vibrations, and they're putting it together with what they have experienced in the outer, and thereby they're making a conditional experience by that. Now human beings work a little differently. Human beings also have this experience where they hear something and they see an act. When you're learning a new language, you go to Germany, for instance, and you say, point to your mouth, and you say, I'm thirsty, oh, I drink the water, I'm thirsty. And they say, you want something to eat? No, I'm thirsty, you know. So then they bring you a glass of water, a glass of beer, a glass of wine, and you say, oh, thank you. And so every time you make that motion, they think that you're meaning whatever it is that you received. If you got a glass of wine, they bring you a glass of wine every time. If you got water, they bring you water every time. Now, when do you want coffee? Now, you see the refinement. The refinement goes a long way on this. And sometimes you imaginarily pick up a cup and you have your finger out just a little bit. You have this cup that you're picking up and you're drinking a cup of tea or coffee. And so they interpret it that way. Now, that makes it very difficult. That makes it a very long and drawn out process. And it makes it something that we are a very long time learning. However, we learn the nuances of the word tea, the nuances of the word coffee, the nuances of the word beer, or whatever it is we choose to have a nuance, water. And so these nuances are given to us as we do this. Now, as we would go to a German person, and we would say, I'd like a glass of water. And we point to the sink and turn on the faucet and take a glass and fill it up. I'd like a glass of water. And he says, oh, I'm Tas Wasser. And so we begin to interpret between the two what it means. Now, he knows what we're saying, and we know what we're saying. And this is how the learning process goes on. Now, we think, again, what a long, drawn-out process. How very long it would take to do all those things and to come to that conclusion. Well, that's true. That's very true. The mind within us has the ability, once the learning process has been started, to very quickly pick up ideas, very quickly pick up thoughts. Ein Tassewasser sounds very much like a glass of water. Ein cup of coffee, ein Tasse coffee, or whatever you want to say, sounds very much like a Löffel, a tisch, a dish, you know. And many other things sound similar, but the thing is, we learn very quickly to know what the words mean. When you take a language course, if you had to take the language course to learn every single word that you would use in that language or in your language, you would be a long time doing it. Little children learn a basic vocabulary and use it. They are listening within. They are interpreting what they hear outwardly to what they want inwardly. And then they no longer interpret outwardly. They think within, I would like a glass of water. And so they scream their head off. Wah, wah, wah. And you have figured out that that scream means they want water. But as time goes on, they say water. As time goes on, they say these things because inside they're listening to the imagery that the mind has pictures of, and then they put that imagery together with words, and then they speak the words. Now, I imagine I am whatever I hear. So, in just the idea of learning language alone, we see a very beautiful condition going on. We see a glass filled with water, and the mind says, glass of water. We see the dinner on the plate, we say, supper. We say, dinner. We say, food. We say, breakfast. We say, lunch. We say, dinner, depending upon what it is that the food appears to be served as. Now, we're making a vast number of decisions and variety of concepts based upon the vibrations that our ears are hearing. In the same way, our sight, you know, we'll be speaking about that another time, but our sight comes to our eyes, and our eyes pick up these vibrations, and then they interpret the vibrations based upon what they have learned to feel the vibrations are, and then they speak the vibrations out in words as to be a tree, a house, a car, a person. Now, I imagine I am whatever I hear. So when I hear something, this is what I think I am. When you hear, just in this illustration, when you hear a beautiful operatic singer, or some particular singer that pleases you, and they're doing a very wonderful job, and you're listening, and in your heart you are that singer, in your heart you are that person who is expressing themselves so beautifully, well, you have this capacity. You have this capacity to think in those directions. You have this capacity to think in other great directions too. And as you think in other great directions, what are you thinking? Are you thinking about only a glass or a dish? No. You're thinking of a banquet. You're thinking of a party. You're thinking of a great many possibilities. You imagine, and you are whatever you hear. Whatever you imagine, that's what you think you are. Now, we say, well, that's not really true. And I say, very much so. This is how the physical world operates. It operates with vibrations. It operates only with that aspect of it, the movement of energy from one point to another, and the symbols that we put to that energy, and that we come to believe that energy is, and then we think that that is what we are seeing, and that's what we're hearing, and that's what we are. When you go to a baby and the baby's crying, you say, there, there, sweetheart, everything's okay now. And you cuddle them and you huggle them. And they say, every time I cry, I get snuggled and huggled. And so they begin to act upon that basis. Now another child is a happy child and is always making happy faces. And you pick up that child and you say, you are such a sweetheart, you are such a love, you are such a doll. And they think that when a person, to get a person to pick them up and say beautiful things to them, give them lovely vibrations, they act in such a way. Now, It's easy to see there how you can have two different actions bringing about the same response. But really, that's not the case. One action we feel we have to make to get the response. The other action we make because it is our nature to make it, and the response is thereby forthcoming, which of course in itself is good too. I imagine I am whatever I hear. Wow. What wonderful things have you imagined that you are? Have you imagined that you could climb to the top of the mountain? Have you imagined that you could sail a boat? Have you imagined that you could play a flute, that you could sing a song? Have you imagined that you could do many wonderful things, that you could give a great speech, great talk, and that everyone at the end of the talk would applaud and applaud and applaud and never want to sit down and say, this is the most magnificent group of statements I've ever heard in my life? Now, it depends on you. It depends on you. Abraham Lincoln gave one of the greatest talks, the Gettysburg Address, and as he did this, no one applauded. No one said anything. It was only later that he found out that it was such a spellbinding talk that no one had the capacity to respond. Whereas the previous political person who was speaking spoke in such beautiful, dynamic terms that people were just mellow with and harmonious with all the way through, they just applauded and applauded. While Lincoln spoke with such deep convictions and such concern for those who had died on the battlefield, with such respect and such sincerity that there could not be any applause because it was too magnificent a group of statements to applaud. It could only be absorbed and enjoyed. It could only be heard and responded to in the heart. I am the notes of music that I hear. How about that? Are you the notes of music that you hear? I know that we all are. And Ellen was playing on the trumpeter bugle this morning, and Rex, our newcomer in the family here, our golden retriever, was listening to her playing the bugle. She says, oh, here's another instrument that we can blow to have the puppies come to us. And Rex just stood there and he says, what is that crazy thing? And Ellen didn't put it down so that Rex could smell it. I said, put it down so you can smell it. So she put it down low so he could smell it and see that it was a nice gadget. And then she blew it gently and more firmly. And he stood back and he said, now that is a crazy noise. That is a crazy noise. And of course, after a while, he'll become accustomed to that noise and he will ignore it. As we become accustomed to many of the sounds in our life that we ignore. I am the notes of the music I hear because I respond to the music. I think the music is beautiful. I think the music has great desirable qualities to it. You see, we have within us so many mechanisms for living and for acting and for doing. We have so many mechanisms that provide us with the tools whereby we could interpret what we hear from within. But we have made it a habit to hear what we hear from without. We interpret within what we have heard without, but we're still listening without. And the technique and the training of listening within is something so beneficial, so beautiful, so wonderful, and yet we don't do it because we have been trained more in listening without than we have in listening within. Now think to yourself, how many times does the mother say, now you go to your room and you think about what you just said? Now, if the mother would say, now you go to your room and you sit there for a few moments and you listen in your heart and you figure out what your heart would have you do, and whatever your heart tells you to do, that's what you want to do. Now, don't say, now whatever your heart tells you what to do, you better do it or else you're going to get a spanking. Well, you see, that messes it all up. You say, now you listen to what your heart tells you what to do, and then you, when your heart tells you to do something, go do it. But mommy, what if my heart tells me to do something bad? Your heart won't tell you to do something bad because you're a good child. You're a good child, and good children don't do bad things. They just listen to their heart, and their heart always tells them, this is a good thing to do, this is a good thing to do, and then they go and do it, and they're so happy. Now, we teach to listen without. We teach, mind what your teacher says. We teach, listen to the music, listen to the radio, listen to the television, listen to all these things. And we should take a little bit of time, just a little bit of time, training them to listen within. Every morning I spend 5, 10 minutes, maybe 6 minutes, training my dog, and then every evening I attempt to find 5 or 6 minutes to do it also. A fine 5 or 6 minutes, my goodness, take it! And so then I take some little nibbles, and I walk across the room, and I say, come, Rex, come! And he comes bumping across the room, thumping away just as happy as he can be. And then I put the treat for him down on the floor in my hand, covered, and he lays down on the floor, and then I let him have the treat. And another time he'll come, and I'll have the treat in my hand, and I'll be standing up, and I'll say, sit. And he comes, and he sits, and I give him the treat. And I work this out in many different ways, because this is his learning situation. Now, he likes to play the game sometime. He doesn't know what it means to sit. But that's my thought. My thought is he is playing the game of not knowing that he's supposed to sit. Now, that is what I am inculcating into his thinking through my thinking. Foolish, foolish, foolish. Rather, when he comes and doesn't sit right away, I just stand there patiently and look at him and say, and just wait and wait. And sooner or later he sits. And when he sits, I say, that's it. Oh, you're so good. You're so wonderful. You're so fantastic. And within a very short time, he has that image of sitting and being congratulated and being appreciated and getting a thank you for doing it. And I do that with all the other little training areas that I work with him. And he does just a beautiful job. Now, we do that too. We have that same situation. Our situation is that we hear the sound within us, we hear the music within us, but we pretend that it comes from without. We say, I wonder where that sound came from. Beethoven, Bach, the musicians, Richard Bach, the writer, and other people, they listen within. As Richard Bach said, I heard the word Jonathan Livingston Seagull, and I turned around and I couldn't figure out where it came from. And I heard it again. I went home and I heard it again. So then I sat down with a pencil and paper, and I heard Jonathan Livingston Seagull, and so I started to write. I had no idea what I was writing. I was listening within. I was listening to my divine within, and the divine within went along beautifully, and I was so proud of myself. I was so proud of myself. And then after a period of time, the voice stopped. The pride had sort of stopped the voice. And then 7 months later, the voice spoke again, because the humility had returned, and he wrote the rest of the book. Now, Mozart, when he was writing his music, he listened within, and he heard within, and he immediately put it down without one change, without one erasure, and his music was exquisite, and it is exquisite even to this day, beautifully, incomparable. And other musicians, they sort of listen within, and they sort of listen without. They listen within, and they hear the music, and then they listen without, and they say, now, which style of music is this? Which tempo am I writing this in? What keys am I using? What orchestration, what movements shall I have that cooperate with the music? And they get so confused. First, they write the music. They write the melody, pure and simple, with the treble and bass clefs perfectly defined. Then they listen within. And they say, okay, I got the music. Now let's hear the symphony playing. So within themselves, they create and direct the symphony playing their music. And as they create the symphony playing their music, what happens? What happens is that the magic of the music is unbelievable. The magic of the music just soars into outer space, and it flows from them. This is the introspection I would have us learn. This is the introspection I would have each of us know for ourselves. I use the musicians and the writers over and over again because they have learned to listen within. Maybe not in all areas of their life, but in the areas of their music and their writing, in the areas of their ideas, in the areas of their magic. You go to hear a speaker speak, and the speaker may have a few subject notes, but the speaker, if he is truly an excellent speaker, he will take those notes and he'll wind them around the hearts of the listener. He will listen within himself and he will hear what his audience wants to hear. Or better yet, he will hear what he wants to tell the audience because he feels harmonious with the audience's desire. Now, can we do that? We do that all the time. Can we do that if we have inconsistency? Not very well. If one minute we believe we can and the next minute we believe we can't, well, we're going to get some sort of a mishmash that doesn't make much sense. But if we can be consistent and stay with the idea that we can and we do it, then the magic comes forth, then the wisdom comes forth, then the genius comes forth, then everything that we want to express. We have the words, we have the notes, we have the thoughts, we have the pictures, we have the illumination for it, and we have that illumination and we live it in such a magnificent way that everyone who hears it says, yes, good and very good. I am the notes of the music I hear. I pass through the feeling of bliss, you know? The great artists, the great writers, live a lot of their time in bliss. And bliss is a state of oneness with the divine within. Bliss is a statement of oneness with the divine within. And we train ourselves in that state of oneness. We train ourselves in that state of oneness with the divine within. We do not try to make sense out of it. We do not try to say, oh, that's just like I felt so good when I climbed the mountain and I got to the top and I said, oh, wow, you know. That's another type of feeling. That type of bliss has no comparison to the divine bliss within. Or you might just say that you have laid down for a moment after you've done a very busy day and you just feel relaxed and peaceful, and then someone turns on some lovely concert music and you feel even more peaceful, more blissful, and you say, that's what bliss is all about. Well, that's not what bliss is all about. What bliss is all about is far greater than any physical response we might have to life. What bliss is all about is a matter of the divine in each of us, responding to the divine in each of us. And the divine in me, let's say, the divine in me is being me and I am being the divine. It has nothing to do with my physical body. It has nothing to do with my mental attitudes, my ability to write, to sing, to play, to do anything. It only has to do with me being me. I like me. And when I'm in that blissful state, then I stop liking me too. The reason I stop liking me is because there's nothing to like. Everything is good and very good. There's nothing to improve. Everything is good and very good. There's nothing that I should want for everything is good and very good. So long as we say, I like me, so long as we say, I want something, so long as we say, I need something, we are not it. Now, to say, I like me is a lot closer to the point, but even when you say, I like me, you're saying it to train yourself and teach yourself to like yourself, which is a good thing. And as you train yourself and teach yourself to like yourself, then you act in that likable way. You act in that most noble, most magnificent way, and your feeling of inner bliss, the feeling of introspection, is a powerful feeling, and you're experiencing it right now. It's a great way to go. It's a great attitude to be going through in your life. Hearing within, I imagine I am whatever I hear, and I am the notes of the music I hear, and I pass through the feeling of bliss, and then I am ready to live what I hear about myself. We live what we hear about ourselves by just letting go and being our divine self. As we let go and are our divine self, we find that there's no tension, there's no pressure, there's nothing to prove, there's nothing to prepare for. The great magicians, them too, the great mathematicians did not prepare for their mathematical formulas. They just thought of a concept, and the mathematical formula was there to express the concept. You and I, we think of the concept of love, unconditional love, that's a specially good one. And as we think of the concept of unconditional love, we are dwelling in that awareness. And as we remain true to all that unconditional love means, then we are living unconditional love, and we are a living example of what unconditional love means. It's a very wonderful circumstance, a very desirable circumstance to live in the aspect of unconditional love. Now, what would be another aspect that we would be living up to? Take the aspect of living up to, I know that I know that I know. I know that I know that I know. Whatever bit of information I choose to know in my mind is there. Now, you listen to some of these rap students, and they just sing out their words and their melodies and their thoughts. Their thoughts are kind of coherent. They're very good. Not always my thoughts, but they fulfill what they want them to do. And their music is consistent. Most of it's a chant. And everything they say, they do not stop and think what they're doing. They just tune in to the divine within them, and it sings to them in the words and the melodies and the harmony and the rhythm, and the music is just amazing. It's just amazing. And they, of course, rhyme the words in a marvelous way with words that you would never think they'd come up with. But they're listening. They're listening to the divine within. They don't care about anybody. They don't care who listens. They don't care who doesn't listen. They just flow with that inner glow of their rap attitude. Now, have you ever tried it? If you haven't tried it, don't knock it. Try it. Try listening to some rap music once. You might select some person with rap music who has a little better taste than some others, because sometimes they get pretty rough in their language, but listen to some of them. And then, as you listen to them, sort of beat with them. And you see, once you get the rhythm going, then they're singing the words, and then you try to sing the words with them. Use your own imagination to come up with words similar to theirs. And then you'll find the rhythm and the rhyming are all there. And then the content you want, the content to tell a story, to tell an idea. And pretty soon you're doing that very thing. And you think, wow, I hated rap before this, and now I rather like it. It causes me to spring forth with ideas, to spring forth with imagination from my within that I never dreamed was there. Gee, that's cool. You know, that's really cool. I'm ready to live what I hear about myself. So, we never want to knock anything, whether it's pornographic things or music that is, hard metal and things that, or even concert music, classical or whatever. Now, the moment we knock it, we are saying we are not getting the message it has to give. And the message it has to give may be not what the words it's saying, not what the beat it has, but the idea that we can research into our inner divine self and come up with something utterly fantastic, something utterly marvelous that is always flowing with purity and goodness and peace and right action and truth. And hey, that's really a way to go, isn't it? Train yourself on hearing within. I imagine I am whatever I hear. I am the notes of music I hear. I pass through the feeling of bliss. I am ready to live what I hear about myself right now. Give it a try. It's a lot of fun. I love you. I love you. I love you.